September 17, 2010, the Norris Group hosted its award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate 2010. The Norris Group assembled an incredible lineup of industry experts to discuss the state of REO from the inside. Topics included regulatory intervention and aftermath, bulk buying myths and facts, and the opportunities emerging for eager real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds went to the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for The Cure. This event would not be possible without generous help from the following platinum partners: The Business Press, Foreclosure Radar, and Sean O'Toole. The San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan. Investors Workshops and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskies. Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander. San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry. Claudia Buys Houses. Fry Wiles, the creative agency responsible for iSurvive2010.com. MVT Productions, who always provide our audiovisual needs. And White House Catering, who will provide the three-course meal for this black tie event. Visit iSurvive2010.com for more details and to watch the event video.
Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
So the original intent of the program is let's get people that have never owned a home in, but a secondary benefit is it also supplies homes to people that were owners that lost them. Have you ever noticed that if you have great financing in place that you might be able to get more for the property? I think what would end up happening is you would be able to get a premium for this type of financing, and that would support the price as well. A secondary feature of just this loan program was when they went to trustee sale, the opening bid would be just the back payments. So just a little example, and I just did this off the cuff in my head. Let's say you had a loan amount of 150 grand at 4.5% interest. 3 months behind, people begin the foreclosure process. 4 months later, foreclosure sale is held. You got about 7 months behind at $1,000 plus foreclosure fees. So 9 grand is the opening bid at a trustee sale. How many would revert to the lender? There's no way. We'd fight over them because that's 4.5% financing. You got to be kidding me. We would take them all. And what percentage would get there? Not an awful lot. But it would provide financing for the group that no one really wants financed, is the investor. And we would buy them. Would we overbid on them? It's a competitive bid situation. The answer is we would. What are you going to do with the extra money? Well, let's don't reward people that don't come through with what they're supposed to do. Let's build a fund that ensures the whole shooting match, or start a program for something that does some good. It's completely, as a matter of fact, this doesn't even have to be a government program. I see ads in the newspaper all the time where very wealthy people are encouraged to donate their money. Let's make it a two-stage process. Donate your money to a nonprofit who makes this loan and causes no losses and ends up with a yield. I would be more than happy if the government didn't have to fund this. And I can't see it losing money. I just really can't. So that's my bright idea. The way tonight is going to be arranged is we're going to do this in a few different segments. The first segment is I'm going to invite Christopher Thornburg up here, but I'm going to introduce him last. And we're going to have some discussion about the book that he encouraged me to read, Money Mischief. It's really a very uncomfortable thing to be disagreeing with Christopher and now Milton Friedman. So you know I'm wrong, but it's okay. I'm here to learn tonight, and I really need to understand it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce the whole panel, and Christopher's going to come up, be the first one here. We're going to talk for about 15 minutes, and then I'm going to invite 4 other panelists, and then after the break, the people from Fannie and Freddie will be up here. And the reason they're here is they are here because they're involved in the bulk sales department. How many of this audience has been frustrated with any effort to buy a bulk purchase? Okay? There you go. So we're glad they're here. By the time we leave tonight, we're going to have a pretty good idea of how it works and how we could access that inventory, and you can know that it's for real. Let me begin by introducing, and you can, as I mentioned your name, you can just briefly stand up and then sit down. Peter Wayman joined Freddie Mac in 2010, January. As senior REO sales director in this position, he oversees the design of sales strategies and how they are applied across REO portfolios. His group oversees the retail sales process as well as auction and inventory sales. I noticed Tommy already making some contacts up there. Peter is also responsible for the affordable strategies, selling homes to organizations engaged in neighborhood stabilization. I actually met Peter as I was a moderator on a panel and enjoyed that conversation, and now we'll get to repeat much of that in front of you. Peter came to Freddie Mac after 32 years of executive relocation experience working with various organizations, including Cartus, Prudential, and Citigroup. He was recognized for a lifetime industry achievement and inducted in the Hall of Leaders by Worldwide ERC. And Peter's a graduate of Cornell University with a BS in Hotel Administration. He's a certified public accountant, senior certification relocation professional, and a global relocation professional. So, Peter, we welcome you. Christopher Thornburg. Christopher is an expert in the study of regional economies. Go ahead and take a bow first. He's an expert in the study of regional economies, real estate dynamics, labor markets, and business forecasting. In 2006, he co-founded Beacon Economics, an economic research and consulting firm that specializes in real estate markets, local economic development, and public and private policy issues. Dr. Thornburg has established a reputation as one of the state's leading economic forecasters. In December 2007, he was appointed to California State Comptroller John Chang's Council of Economic Advisors, the body that advises the state chief fiscal officer about critical economic issues facing California. I guess that's pretty important. Dr. Thornburg also serves as the advisor on the advisor board of Paulson & Company, one of Wall Street's most successful hedge funds. Prior to launching Beacon, he was an economist with UCLA Anderson Forecast, where he regularly announced the economic outlooks for California, LA, and the East Bay. I've enjoyed discussing and asking Christopher questions for the last couple of years. And to be honest with you, he's one of my favorite interviews because I don't have to know the answer to the question I ask him. And he gets a lot of very tough questions from me because when he's on the show, I really take advantage of trying to understand the very difficult subject of economics. So, Christopher, thank you for taking time to be here. Our next panelist is Joseph Magziarez. Joseph is in appraisal with designations MAI SRA, and he is the 2011 president of the Appraisal Institute, which means he will be standing in front of Congress this year lobbying for his industry. Joseph's been an active member of the Appraisal Institute for 38 years. He served in a variety of capacities at all levels of the organization. On a national level, Joseph served two terms on the Appraisal Institute's National Board of Directors. He has served as chair of the Education Committee for 5 years, has also chaired the National Audit Committee, instructor and faculty committees, and education and publication committees. I guess you've probably worn every hat there is in the organization. He's an approved Appraiser Institute instructor for 26 courses and in the Appraisal Institute's QEAECE and USPAP curriculums. He's also had international assignments in Naples, Italy, Istanbul, Turkey. So we have one of the top experts in the appraisal industry with us tonight, Joseph Magziarez. Next on our panel is Daniel Phelan. Daniel is president and CEO charged with the day-to-day leadership of Pacific Southwest Realty Services mortgage operation. Pacific Southwest Realty Services is an investment firm focused on commercial real estate, representing and advising both real estate clients and institutional investors in debt and equity placement, strategic planning, property sales, and loan administration. Pacific Southwest brings competence and integrity to helping investors and owners meet their capital needs. He joined Pacific Southwest in September of 73 after graduating with a BSD from Creighton University and has been working in the mortgage banking industry ever since. He's both a certified mortgage banker and a charter realty investor, and has been very active and has held various positions in the Mortgage Bankers Association, California Mortgage Bankers Association, and local building industry, trade groups, and CRI Society Board. To recognize his service to the industry over the last 35 years, in February 2008, he was awarded the Distinguished Service Award by the Mortgage Bankers Association, the highest award bestowed by the association. Daniel, we're happy to have you here. Also on our panel was Tommy Williams. Tommy's a graduate of Penn State University. And he's just a delightful man. I enjoy interviewing you so much. And we've become friends. One of those things about interviewing Tommy is that whatever length of time I have, it's never long enough. And if Tommy's selling something, I'm buying it. That's all I can tell you. I've had him auction my homes in other states, and I just really like the man a lot. He's been in the auction business with his family for a very long time, going all the way back to the 1800s. There's been some connection to it. No, not Tommy, though. No. He's earned some white hair, but not that much. Okay. He's the graduate of the historic Repart School of Auctioneering. Spent over 40 years experiencing real estate auctions, land development, real estate investment. He has served as the past president and president of the National Auction Association. He started the Williams & Williams Auction Company with his son in 86 and became chairman of the board in 2001. He's just been involved in the auction business for a very long time, enough so that he's conducted 10,000 auctions in 48 states and also in other countries as well. Tommy, just welcome. Very happy you're here. Also joining us on the panel this year is Sean O'Toole. Sean? Sean really owns the foremost foreclosure information website, Foreclosure Radar. If you're in the business of buying foreclosures, or if you're just an investor interested in trends, you're going to go to that website. It's the only company that tracks every foreclosure in California with daily updates on all foreclosure auctions. Prior to Foreclosure Radar, Sean spent 15 years building and launching software companies before entering the foreclosure business in 2002, where he successfully bought and sold more than 150 foreclosure properties. And when he started doing the foreclosure buying, he noticed that there was a lot of gaps in the services that he needed to do intelligent research. And basically that's what Foreclosure Radar is filling that gap and exceeding every month to another level. If you look at that website for very long, it changes and improves, and it changes and improves. And it's quite a benefit to the industry. So, Sean, we're glad you're here. And last but certainly not least, Sarah Letts. Sarah is Director in Credit Loss Management for Fannie Mae. She's responsible for implementing Fannie Mae's neighborhood stabilization strategies, including pool sales of REOs to government entities, land banks, and nonprofits. She joined Fannie Mae in 1999, and prior to her current position, she specialized in debt financing and equity investments for affordable housing. Before Fannie Mae, Sarah developed affordable housing on behalf of community development corporations in L.A. and Chicago. Sarah received a bachelor's degree from Stanford University in economics and political science and a master's degree from UCLA, Graduate School of Architecture and Urban Planning. Okay, Christopher, why don't you come on up, and we'll spend the first 15 minutes or so straightening me out. How you doing?
Good.
You are the...
I want everybody to know that this is a complete ambush interview. I was not told this is going to occur. So...
A complete... No, you
and
know
this,
what?
And this 0% down thing... No. Have you seen FHA loans are spiking, too? Just because they're not as bad as subprime doesn't mean they're not bad.
What about the first 35 years? Are you ignoring that?
Well, have you looked the last 10? That's the relevant one.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't, because
I'm sorry. What's more relevant today's policy? What happened 5 years ago or 50 years ago?
No, it's when you have a pricing structure.
No way. No. 5% down.
Okay, we're going to get into that.
5% down.
All right.
Okay.
We'll get into that later. All right. I was going to take it easy, but...
Oh, no.
Okay. No, the truth is, you know what? One of the things that I really respect about the guests is that they don't know the questions, you know, but they know
their
stuff.
Not even that you're being interviewed.
They know their stuff, so it's not a problem. Okay. Paul Romer, Stanford economist. A crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Have we wasted one?
Absolutely.
What could we have done that we didn't?
Well, first of all, we keep hearing the wrong mantra, particularly when it comes to the financial system. We keep hearing how the consumer in the U.S. has been so, they took on so much debt that the American consumer, when they couldn't pay that debt back, that's what created all this problem. And that's not the case. We learned back in the Great Depression that banks shouldn't be allowed to leverage up. We learned that because if banks are leveraged up and economic problems occur, it creates a small problem and makes it into a huge problem. So we said you can't leverage up. We had all sorts of rules in place. You can't leverage up. And those rules were chipped away and chipped away. In 1960, of all private sector debt in the U.S., 10% was the financial sector. In 2007, it was 43% of outstanding private sector debt was the financial sector, all by itself. The other hunk of it, the other 60%, 40% financial, was the other 60%, 30% business, 30% consumers. Consumers didn't really leverage up that much. They did on their mortgages, there's no doubt about it, but not to the extent the financial system did. And now, of course, that is what created this credit crisis, that created so many other problems in the economy, and yet have we really addressed that problem? Have we really gone out there and are trying to say, look, you can't do this anymore? And because you're watching, but even before you even got on this crisis, you're already watching that wall get knocked down. It worries me to death.
Well, what's interesting, the way they solved it is, let's say, after Lehman fell, they created TARP and immediately handed money to the organizations that you're talking about.
And they got it right back again for donations.
That's
so
right.
So it's just a revolving door.
Yeah,
right?
So I think we did miss out on what we could have done in this crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because of time, I want to talk about this book that you had me read. Okay. And there's a quote that I get that this was important, obviously. And the reason why I really want to have this discussion is because I'm really having a hard time seeing how inflation emerges when it's very difficult for wages to increase and very difficult for businesses to ask for product increases. Now, I understand I have that backwards because I read this book, that inflation, in fact, drives both of those things.
Okay. Yes, to some extent.
Okay. So here's the quote, and there were plenty of them in the book. Inflation occurs when the quantity of money rises appreciably more rapidly than output, which is GDP?
Yes.
Okay. And the more
Real GDP.
Okay. And the more rapid the rise in the quantity of money per unit of output, the greater the rate of inflation.
Right.
Okay. Okay, here's my problem, and I don't understand Japan's charts. If Milton Friedman was looking at their growth of money that they've created over the last 20 years, solving their issues with trying to prevent deflation, I guess. Haven't they created an awful lot of money, but they haven't?
No, actually not. In fact, that's quite the opposite. No, I mean, in fact, a lot of economists agree that the problem with Japan's central bank is that they have been so unwilling to pour liquidity into the economy. Japan went through a period of time of quantitative easing, not unlike we did, but at a much more aggressive stance. And basically, all that cash sat there in the form of excess reserves in the banks. And when they stopped quantitative easing, it all came back. Their actual money supply, their sort of version of M2, didn't expand. So, no, they haven't been nearly as aggressive as they might be.
Okay. Now, they tried to expand it?
No, they didn't. That's my point.
Well, it went into the banks.
Yeah. They did this quantitative easing program.
Right.
And the problem with quantitative easing is it's a financial transaction with the banks. What that means is the banks can essentially completely neutralize it by simply holding that cash and not allowing it to get into the system. A different form of inflationary monetary policy would be what, say, comes from Argentina. There, they don't play financial transactions with the banks. In Argentina, assuming the banks will lend it out, thus creating more money. In the case of Argentina, the government printed the money and they used it to spend directly.
Right.
And that, of course, is automatically inflationary because it's instantaneously getting into the economy. So it goes back to what Ben Bernanke is saying. Ben Bernanke used to be called in academic circles Helicopter Ben.
Right.
Because he famously posited that, look, okay, you can quantitative ease with the banks, and maybe they won't lend it out, in which case it's not working. What do you do then? Well, you could give it to the government to go out and spend, or he said you could fly around in helicopters and just throw it out in bags. It's not a bad idea. In fact, you might even argue it's better than giving it to the banks or letting the government spend it.
Okay, so what have we done in the United States but give money to the banks who are not necessarily...
Well, I mean, we have gone through a period of time of quantitative easing, and of the money he poured into the economy, most of it actually is sitting in the banks in the form of excess reserves, but a portion of it, larger than most people would see because so much went into excess reserves, but some of it has gotten in the money supply. And as a result of that, the money supply hasn't gone in sort of negative territory the way it did in Japan. It's staying in the kind of 1% to 2% growth range, which is not deflationary.
Okay,
he's offset it appropriately. And again, and let me say this about the whole deflation argument.
Okay.
I think what you should have gotten out of that book is that price levels are effectively controlled by policy if you're willing to go far enough. And Ben Bernanke has stood there in front of people, in front of Congress, and said, I'm willing to go far enough. If I see any hint of deflation, I will pour my money into the system, one way or the other. And if that means going up in helicopters and throwing it out, that's what he'll do.
Mm-hmm.
So understand, it's a policy choice. It's not some. It's not a state of nature. In the long run, Ben Bernanke has absolute control over the price level. Well, in a foggy sort of world. I mean, the biggest problem is if he fights it too dramatically, what if he does set off inflation? Then we have a big problem.
Okay. So what are you worried about either extreme?
At this point in time, no, not at all. In fact, at this point in time, it seems like he's done a wonderful balancing act. Maybe inflation's a little bit too low, but the number we got today still says core up 1% year over year. Not the 2% they aim for, not the 5% they don't want, and certainly not this negative 3 or 4% that this boogeyman deflation fear-mongering folks on CNBC keep talking about.
What would we have had if we didn't add $1 trillion of money? Would we have had negative GDP?
If he had not poured this cash into the system, we may very well have gone into a more deflationary type situation. And yes, that would have led to probably deeper problems inside the economy overall.
Okay. Is what we're doing mortgaging our future to any great extent?
Not what he's doing, as long as he's willing to pull the cash out when the time comes. It's what the fiscal side of the equation is that scares me to death.
Okay, help me with that then.
Well, okay, so fiscal is the guys in Congress saying, well, we're going to spend $4 trillion but only tax $2.7
trillion. Okay.
And we're going to borrow that $1.3 trillion from the rest of the world. That $1.3 trillion has to be paid back. Ben Bernanke doing his money stuff is just money. He's just moving paper around. It doesn't have any effect on future. There's no future liabilities involved there.
Because he can withdraw it.
Because he can withdraw it.
And if he does, then the economy
interest
just
rates
doesn't
go up.
Have that boost. But
well, interest rates would go up and it would slow things down.
Okay. The timing of that would probably be very important to the real estate business, for instance.
Not just the real estate business, to the entire economy.
Well, interest rates, I have a book here, but this is an antique book of interest rates from 1955.
Mm-hmm.
And the lowest interest rate in the book is 4.5%.
I've seen those numbers.
Yeah, which isn't as low as what we have for
today. Well, we are totally in a bond bubble. This is what scares me to death. This is what I'm most worried about right now.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2010. 1M1 Properties, Adrenaline Athletic, Awesome Limousines, Benton Investment Group, Colonial Gardens Mobile Home Community, Community Reinvest Group, Del May Properties, Elite Auctions, Entrust California, Everlast Photography, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Keystone CPA, Landwood Title, Las Brisas Escrow, Levis Financial Services, Mike Cantu, North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Investor Magazine, Realty 411 Magazine, Summit Solutions, Tony Alvarez, TheREOMentor.com, WealthPoint, Weston South Coast Plaza, To find out more about I Survived Real Estate 2010, visit isurvived2010.com.